Hello, I'm Will Shires and this is Talking Trucks. In this episode, I'll be chatting with Transaid's CEO, Caroline Barber, and Head of Fundraising, Florence Bierman. Transaid gets a lot of support from the UK logistics industry, and for good reason too, because the work it does in sub-Saharan Africa saves lives. If you're enjoying the podcast and want to stay abreast of everything that's happening in this industry, then why not subscribe to Commercial Motor Magazine weekly? For great deals, head over to www.com-mot.com. That's www.com-mot.com. Okay, thank you very much for joining me both. First of all, let's have a bit of background to Transaid. You're celebrating a big anniversary this year, aren't you?
We are, Will, absolutely. We are turning 25 as an independent organisation this year. So it's a really good time for us to be celebrating together with all our partners in the industry.
Okay, and how did it all start?
We were originally a function within Save the Children, and we were set up as a call to act from our patron, who is the Princess Royal,
yes,
the Chartered Institute of Logistics and Transport, and Save the Children UK, who really recognised the issues around logistics and transport, particularly in East Africa at the time, with aid getting through to where it was needed. And there was a call really to the industry and to partners to say, how can we improve the effectiveness of the delivery of this aid?
Okay. So give us an overview of Transaid's mission, you know, maybe some specific initiatives and projects you're working on at the moment.
Well, we've transitioned over time, so we're more of a kind of development organisation now, working closely with government partners.
Because you're not a charity, are you?
We are a registered charity, but we're really working very much rather than that sort of traditional aid model, where humanitarian response, we actually work much closer with governments and partners in the countries that we're working on for those sort of long-term strengthening and improvements. So we work at the moment on two main areas, which is road safety, particularly professional driver training, and access to healthcare. So our programmes would include helping governments and ministries of health reach children and pregnant women in rural areas and strengthen their emergency transport and access to health services and medicines. And on the road safety side, we work to improve the standards for commercial drivers. So that includes partnering with training centres to lift the standards, working on national standards or regional standards, and also actually building skills at training centres that we partner with.
Okay, that all sounds very good. Could you give us, I mean, first of all, how do you measure how successful these projects are? It can't be easy. So it's certainly not the driver training anyway, I wouldn't have thought.
It's not easy, Will, and it's a constant constant area of work that we put quite a lot of focus and time and attention into. On our access to healthcare side, it's easier to do because we're able to measure the number of communities reached. We're able to measure indicators such as we have proxies for maternal health, number of women who've delivered with a skilled birth attendance. We're able to, on the malaria side, look at how many access to treatment for malaria that through the system strengthening and the supply chain strengthening our programmes have enabled. And then we can actually go even further and work on models that look at lives saved as a result of outcomes. So we have a very robust framework to do that. On the road safety and driver training side, it is, as you say, more tricky to do. More vehicles are coming onto the roads all the time. Statistics in some of the areas we're working are a little bit more challenging to get hold of.
Yeah.
So actually showing a really clear reduction in death and injury on the roads when the number of vehicles is still rising so quickly is a real challenge.
Of course it is, yeah.
It's an ongoing area that we're working on, and actually we have an advisory board with quite a few experts working on this issue with us. But we have developed like a model, a theory of change for this, and we have a number of indicators that we track. So we're also looking at where we've actually been able to affect getting new standards in place in the countries, where they've been adopted, where they've been rolled out. And we're also go on to track a number of proxy measures along the way that also in some ways we're looking at a suite of indicators that, of course, sometimes it is a case of trainers trained and drivers trained, but we're also looking at otherwise how can we look at issues such as reduction in harsh braking,
yeah,
near misses, etc. But It is challenging, and it's always balancing the funding we have to go as far as
possible. Of course.
We are also starting to look at how we can bring telematics into our programmes as well. It's something we've wanted to do for quite a while, but I think our partners haven't necessarily seen the value or felt that it's something that they want to be involved in. But we have two donated trucks currently, donated by partners in the UK, that are either at sea or about to be at sea, that have their current microlized boxes fitted. And then when they get there, we're going to work out how we can build that into our training programs. And hopefully that's the first pilot of kind of really seeing how we can measure things like a reduction in harsh braking, etc. And we're also hoping that by doing that, we can build some appetite for telematics within Zambia as a whole, so that rather than just our training centre having them, people can see the benefits of having telematics within their fleet, so that they can measure the progress that the drivers are making and we can see that roads are getting safer.
I see. Going back to those trucks you've just mentioned then, so how many vehicles do you now have on the African continent?
As Transaid, we don't operate any vehicles ourselves, so we work with partner training centres. Typically, these would be government partner training centres, because that's where we can have the most change, actually, practical standards, but also policy. So, for example, there's 10 in the fleet in Zambia at the moment.
Wow, 10?
Yes.
I'm sure when I was there, there was about 3 or 4.
That's exactly right. When you first came out, Will, we actually had one vehicle originally at the partner training centre,
yeah.
And it is absolutely the support of the UK industry. Over the years, we've had MAN, and we've had the Malcolm Group and others donating vehicles.
Well, I remember driving a Samworth Brothers one to the port.
Yeah,
that was about 6 or 7 years ago now.
And
I think.
So they've just donated another one. So that's one of the ones that is about to go, along with Fagan and Wally as well.
Brilliant. Okay.
And then we have a few vehicles in the National Institute of Transport as well, up in Tanzania. We've also facilitated donation of vehicles to Uganda as well, and we're looking at options for Ghana at the moment. So we're quite targeted, and what we tend to do is we work with the partner training centres. What's the need? Because, you know, whether it's an Arctic, whether we're looking at a rigid, where we're looking at a tanker, based on actually where is the need from the industry, but where we're also seeing a lot of road crashes that we think we need to build training capacity to respond to.
I see. Now, as we've just said, it's difficult to measure successes. So does that make it difficult to maintain long-term donors, because they're not seeing immediate successes?
I think we've actually have a fantastic network of donors, both in the corporate partner side, but we've also got people who really understand our programs, such as the technical arm of the German government, GIZ, who also invest in our work, because they do understand it doesn't happen overnight. So I think we're very lucky that the industry understands that the work that we're doing does take time to build practical training capability,
yeah,
to ensure that there are vehicles of the standard required, trainers trained to the standard, who can also train trainers to make sure it's sustainable, and then that work to get those national standards adopted. And when we talk about the national standards, we're also really, you know, it's not Transaid saying, hey, this is the national standard. We sit down with all the stakeholders, we gather and we consult, and then we also have produced collectively with our partners in the countries we're working with, instructors' manuals, training guides. So there's a lot of information sitting behind this that's really practical that people can run with. And I think we are able to, and I'm really proud of the successes that the driver training programs have had. We've built a model that has gone from, as you mentioned, you know, when you first came out.
When was it? It must have been about 2009, I think, maybe.
Transaid started working with the Industrial Training Centre in Zambia around 2006 in a very light touch way. And then in 2007-08, that's when we sort of really got going.
Okay.
We built a model there, which is a partnership, which helps to build the training, look at what the standards are. And then actually, for example, now, if you want to learn to drive a truck in Zambia, because we don't subsidise that training. You know, people have to pay to come and get the training. So there's a sort of recognition of the value and the demand. They're fully subscribed, our partners, ITC, for the rest of 2023. So they really have the quality of the training that they're doing. There really is a demand both in private sector and for individuals wanting to learn to drive a truck, or now there's also forklifts in other areas.
Yeah.
So we we have, you know, the wonderful job that the ITC and the hardworking trainers have done there. We are operating and offering professional driver training in Zambia and beyond. People are coming from outside as well, neighbouring countries, to a much higher standard now. Trainers who are trained to internationally recognised standards. And actually, some of the trainers at ITC, for example, one of the trainers has just been over to Sierra Leone to roll out some training and train trainers. So we've got, both in Zambia and in Uganda, some of the best trainers actually on the continent. Brilliant. Who are able to go, and that, for us, that's a really measure of success, because that's not about a dependency on sending out trainers. It's really strong capacity in the countries we're working.
So having spent a week myself in Zambia, I mean, I can vouch for the quality of the driving was absolutely appalling in some cases. And I remember someone telling me a story there, an absolute horror story, about a petrol tanker that had crashed, and everyone had come out to collect the petrol in buckets, and someone had a cigarette on the go. I mean, oh, absolutely horrendous.
And that happens with alarming regularity. There was, I think, last year in Cameroon, and there's also been a major incident in Tanzania not long ago, and we're talking, I think, close to 100 fatalities in Cameroon, because exactly that, people are coming out trying to gather, and really, really, really horrendous.
So tell me, with all these projects on the go, do you think maybe you're spreading yourself a bit thinly? Would you be better off ploughing all your resources into one or two projects?
These are really good questions, and the questions that we sort of ask ourselves at Transaid regularly. I think at the moment, if you look 10, 15 years ago, we did have more, two or three programmes on the go. But we have grown since then. We've got even more members and supporters. And actually, our model tries to be not to be somewhere for 20, 30 years, but actually to work with partners in country, try to raise the standards, use our model. And then when the standards have raised to a certain point, like we've done in Zambia, we're actually pull back slightly. Our support to Zambia on the road safety side is much less now. And then we'll target where we have been more recently in Uganda, Tanzania. And now we've taken the model to Ghana as well with some additional funding. Because I think we think that's where we can have the most impact and also be a bit of a catalyst for change as well.
Yeah.
There's huge unmet need. I mean, there's so many countries, sub-Saharan Africa and of course beyond, that you know, we have a global public health crisis, 1.3 million people plus killed on the roads every year. So we try to balance not spreading ourselves too thin, but also recognising that we have a bit of an obligation to try to expand our impact and reach as much as our resources would allow us to.
Yeah. So you've kind of answered this one, because, I mean, some critics argue that international aid organisations can inadvertently perpetuate dependency. But clearly, you're not doing that. You are empowering local communities and promoting self-sufficiency, aren't you?
I think we do. I mean, partnerships is absolutely at the heart of everything that we do in the way that we work. We won't go to work in a country unless the government are very keen for us to come and work there. Private sector engagement is strong. We don't have this approach of trying to go and set up big TransAid offices in every different country. We deliberately base ourselves, for example, within ministries of health or within national training centres, and try to sort of really work to empower fantastic partners who we're so privileged to work with.
Yeah.
And I think our Mamas Against Malaria programme in Zambia is a really good example of that.
Okay.
It was a 5-year programme. We saw really amazing reduction in the number of children dying from severe malaria, about 96% in the first year. And then when we increased our coverage to about 1 million people, that was about 87%. But in terms of lives saved, that's a huge number.
Yeah,
but that program, you know, we haven't just left and that program has stopped. We have facilitated it being transitioned to the Zambian government, and I think that is the really important bit, that all of those sort of infrastructure pieces and those sort of community engagement pieces that we originally put in place, we've stepped back, and yet we know they're still continuing.
Yeah.
And that those communities really value what has been done. And I think one of the key bits there, for me, what I see is sort of one of the really big successes of that program, is that kind of a lot of it centered around a particular drug which was World Health Organization approved but wasn't in Zambia before we started that program. Now it is, but it's also now part of the Ministry of Health in Zambia's procurement process. They now see it as something that is crucial to battling severe malaria, so they add it to their procurement list of things that have to be in the country alongside, you know, drugs for HIV and AIDS, for example. Yeah. And so they've taken that on themselves, and we've helped enact that change, but it's still continuing without us. And that, for me, is, you know, that's what organisations like TransAid should be doing. We help facilitate a change. We bring things in if necessary, and then when we step back, those things continue.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. So even though you've got governments on your side, do you still face a lot of red tape and bureaucracy when you're setting up these projects?
There can be, there definitely can be. For example, the rollout of the East Africa Community new standard on commercial and passenger freight that we were involved in developing, to actually roll that out to all the member states, it takes an awful lot of time and consultation and real tenacity just to sort of keep working with stakeholders to do. And of course, different competing demands on countries at different times. Yeah. I would also say there's a fair amount of bureaucracy as well in some of the agencies. Some of the UN agencies and others, also the wheels can move a little slower than we might be used to in I would say the UK sort of transport sector. One of the things I really enjoy about working with TransAid is we are still relatively small, so we're able to move things quite quickly and actually sort of have work through some of those, and we don't have so many processes or layers, so we're actually able to work quite efficiently and quickly to actually sort of, you know, see the impact. So it's quite motivating on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah. Okay. Now, something I wanted to chat to you both about is your cycle challenges, because rather stupidly, I've just signed up to do Kenya next year, so I've got a year to get fit and less fat. There's 474 kilometres of mountain biking, including two. Well, I think they're described as hills in the literature, but they're 2,500 metres high.
Small mountains.
They're small mountains, yeah. I actually went out on my bike for the first time in a long time over the weekend, and I went up Box Hill, which was on the Olympic route. I mean, I stopped three times, but eventually I got to the top. And I thought to myself, well, that must be about 500 or 600 metres. It was 170. So, 2,500 times two is going to be a challenge. Wait, you've just come back from one now, haven't you?
Yes, we had our London to Paris ride to celebrate our 25th anniversary.
Oh, that's right.
Just last weekend. So me and my colleague Maddie was with 40 transport logistics professionals. We didn't have to cycle quite that many hills, but it was quite hilly, and some people did get up and walk.
Oh, did they?
You know, that doesn't matter. It's about getting to the end. And, yeah, you know, I think what really strikes me about those challenges, regardless of where they are, whether the African or the European ones, really is the camaraderie. And I think, you know, because it's an industry ride, everyone has so much in common, and everyone is really happy to look out for each other and cycle, yeah, at the back, even if they're actually a very strong cyclist. No one really matters. It doesn't matter when you get there.
No, I did find that last time. I was obviously at the back of the pack the whole time. But, a lot of the guys, even like from Michelin, who are always at the front of the pack normally, they come back and have a chat and watch you back. What I'm dreading is last time I had a blister. Well, I won't tell you where it was, but it was the size of a £5 note. So, I'm not looking forward to going through that again. How many people have you got signed up for Kenya? How many places have you got? And if anyone listening has me put off by my blister, wants to sign up, how do they go about it?
So far we've got about 20 people signed up. We're looking for about 45. I think we'll cap it at that number. We could take more, but we feel that that's a really good-sized group and a size that we're really comfortable with. I think any more than that, and you might lose some of that camaraderie. So I would say, I've done 5 African challenges during my time at TransAid, and they really are the most amazing experiences. You see a country in a way that you would never, ever see from a car or a bus or, yeah, you know, up from a plane, and the camaraderie in the group and that side of things, you know, you truly do make friends for life. And I think also from sort of really understanding what TransAid does and our work, you know, you'll cycle through villages where, you know, there is very little there, and you do kind of think through those things like, well, if I lived here and my child was sick, how would I get to a health facility? You know, what systems are in place? And I think particularly when we were in Malawi, the group had lots of conversations about that, about, you know, just the lack of infrastructure.
Yeah.
And also some of the states of the roads and the trucks that you see. You know, no, we don't, TransAid doesn't look at infrastructure, but we do look at kind of the quality of the vehicles and overloading and maintaining all of that kind of thing. And, you know, we get a lot of truck aficionados on our trips, so they enjoy kind of looking at that and comparing it to the UK. So it really does kind of bring home a lot of the work that TransAid does. And we do currently have a major program in Kenya, so we hope that we'll be able to introduce you to some of those people that that are making that happen as well.
Yeah. Now, you've assured me, even though this one's got some massive climbs, you don't have to be the world's fittest person, do you? I mean, I'm fat, wrong side of 50, and quite unfit at the moment. So that shouldn't put people off, should it?
So I think particularly our African cycle challenges are open to absolutely everyone. We effectively go at the pace of the slowest cyclist. You know, we group together. And I'm sure many people have heard this story before, but when I did my first cycle challenge back in 2012, which was Uganda, I had never ridden a bike before.
No, really?
I'd done 3 months of training. I cycled all 480 kilometres or whatever it was across Uganda. I did, however, give myself nerve damage in both hands, so I would advise some training so that doesn't happen. But, you know, I certainly wasn't fit. It was a complete baptism of fire.
Yeah.
But I made it the whole way, and the group and the support crew couldn't have been more supportive. So I think whoever you are, whatever you think your age or your fitness abilities or whatever they are, it's really very achievable. You know, we always say on the first day at breakfast, all you really need to do is get to the next breakpoint, which is sort of 20 kilometres.
I remember that, and that really worked. You just think, yeah, all I've got to do is 20 kilometres. You get there, have a can of Coke, some sweets, and then another 20 kilometres, that's all it is, yeah.
Whereas if you think about it as the full 480k or whatever it is, that's incredibly daunting.
Yeah.
But it's all about the break stops, it's all about refueling. And I also think with the African challenges, the people who take it slower, the people who get off and talk to communities and have that chat with a farmer who's happens to be cycling next to you, and, you know, and go and stop and take photos of the animals, they're the ones who enjoy it most. There is really no point of having your head down and just following the tarmac, because you won't get to see the amazing country that you're cycling through. So I would say it's most certainly a challenge, but I think anyone who's got some determination and thinks that they can do it, I would really recommend it.
And run through the amount of money people need to raise if they are going to be signing up.
Yeah, so it's £4,200 plus a registration fee. That includes basically everything, as well as a significant donation to TransAid. The only thing it doesn't include is any vaccinations that you might need, and your visa, and any alcoholic drinks you might choose to have at the end of the challenge. It doesn't include the safari on the last day, but it includes absolutely everything else. And we have a dedicated team who can support you with how you can fundraise that amount. And most people find that a sponsored jersey is the easiest way to do that. So having different bits of you effectively for sale, but at different amounts to lots of different companies. And it's always really nice on the first day coming down to breakfast and everyone's sitting there fully labelled up with all of their different transport logistics companies.
So something else I wanted to talk to you about is your patron, the Princess Royal, Princess Anne. Now, I'm not the world's biggest royalist, but I have to say the two or three times I've met her, I think she's absolutely incredible. Such a hard worker. Do you have much to do with her? How often does she come to TransAid functions?
We are really lucky to have the Princess Royal as our patron, and she does give us an awful lot of time and focus. And I think because she's been with us, Transaid was her brainchild from the beginning, she gives us an awful lot of time and attention. Typically in any one year, she might come to 3 engagements for us, which is fantastic.
Yeah, so that is brilliant.
Different corporate partners, and she's always very willing to speak on our behalf and help raise awareness of some of the issues. Florence, you might have more to say on this as well.
Yeah, and I think I've seen her go to a whole range of different things. You know, I've taken her to anything from a tyre warehouse to, you know, Malcolm Group's 100th birthday. And, you know, what she really likes doing is speaking to people and meeting the people that make things happen. So, you know, if you suggest a programme to her when really she's just sitting and listening, she doesn't want to do that. She wants to engage with the people who have meant that 100th birthday has been achieved,
yeah,
or that they're able to, you know, open a new warehouse or wherever it might be. So I think probably in my time in Transaid, I've probably been to something like 20 or 30 different engagements with her, which I think is, you know, that's a testament to her.
Yeah.
And she came to see our work in Uganda last October.
Oh, really?
She came to see our driver training school. She met all of the different driver trainers. She met some of the women who were going through the programme as well, and had, you know, she really enjoyed hearing their stories about
what cool. She had an HGB license herself, didn't she? Yeah.
For her horse books. And so, you know, she really understands Transaid's work. She's been to Madagascar, I think she's been to Kenya,
Ghana.
She's, you know, she doesn't just turn up. She really understands what we do. She follows it with passion. I always say that, you know, one of the things that I need to do to prepare for an event that she's coming to is to write her a speech that's, you know, a palace requirement, and she pretty much just reads it, rips it up and writes her own speech, because she, and always conveys the message that we want, but she talks about things that she thinks are important.
Yep.
And she wants to show the industry that she understands it, and I think that's actually amazing given how many different engagements she goes to.
Because she can do 2 or 3 in a day, can't she?
Oh, I think at least.
Yeah.
I think it's normally more like 4 or 5.
Wow.
Wherever we go, she's always come from somewhere and she's always going somewhere else.
Yeah.
And she is, you know, this is not controversial, she is the hardest working royal. There is data to prove that.
Yeah.
But I think even so, we do incredibly well out of how many times we get her per year. Absolutely. Compared to some other organisations.
The last function of yours that I met her, she listened to a few guest speakers and then she got up and spoke herself. And her speech included information she'd learnt from listening to people in the room. You know, she was spot on, really, really good. And she came out and spoke to every single person there. I even mentioned my blister to her, actually. She quickly moved on to the next person at that point. But no, I've got a lot of time for her. So, finally, tell us how you two got into this industry. Why are you here? Well, Caroline, in fact, when we first met in Lusaka, I believe you were still on secondment from Wincanton, weren't you?
Yeah, so, that's exactly right.
How did all that come about?
So I joined Wincanton's graduate programme exactly 20 years ago, to last week. And effectively, in many of the ways that our corporate partners send secondees, I saw an opportunity after the tsunami. Transaid put a call out for looking for support to help with not the immediate response but the reconstruction phase. So I travelled out to Sri Lanka with Transaid to help look up the requirements for rebuilding of homes, really, and actually what the transport logistics requirements were going to be in the aftermath. So seeing Transaid's work firsthand and being able to apply skills from the transport and logistics sector was just incredibly motivating. So I ended up doing a few shorter term placements from 2 weeks up to sort of 3 months. And then when you met me in Zambia, I was actually on a 2 year sort of loan.
Oh, it was a two year loan. Wow.
Yeah. And then when I came back, I went back to Wincanton for a while, but my heart had sort of, you know, become fully in this side of things. So that's what I love about this job. You actually get to still work with the transport logistics sector very closely, but actually also able to, you know, deliver that really impactful long-term change in Africa.
Yeah, I see. And how long have you held the top job here now?
So I'm about 5 years, and my sort of journey through Transaid, I came in as a volunteer. We set up the first driver training, sort of the longer term driver training program work in Zambia with huge support from the industry. When I came back to Transaid, I came as head of program. So I did that for 7 years, and then I've been in the this current role as CEO for just over 5.
Okay. And Florence, same question for you.
So my background's slightly different. So Transaid was back in 2012, effectively my kind of first full-time proper job in the charity sector. And I joined as marketing assistant. So I was effectively working on the events, particularly things like Cycle Uganda and a few other bits and pieces. So I did that for about 3.5 years. Then I left for a bit, which we tend not to talk about. And then I came back in 2017 as head of fundraising, and I've been here almost seven years, which has gone very quickly. But I think that point about the industry is really key. It's one of the favourite bits about my job, is that I've discovered this industry that I probably never would have done in quite the same way otherwise.
Yeah.
And, you know, going back to London, to Paris, for example, you know, getting to spend a whole weekend with all of those 40 plus transport and logistics professionals has been nothing but a complete pleasure. And it's, you know, it's so lovely to be so welcomed and so so sort of part of something, whilst also being a charity at the same time.
Yeah, fantastic. So finally, I suppose, how can individuals or organisations get involved and support you guys? What do you need?
There's a huge range of ways to get involved. We're lucky enough to have official sort of corporate members, corporate partners, so we're always looking for new partnerships and always happy. And we tailor those very much to the needs. There's not a sort of one size fits all. So if anybody would like to get in touch to explore corporate partnership, that would be absolutely fantastic. Through our partnership schemes, they were able to develop a whole range of different things, whether it's doing a technical placement, volunteering overseas for us, whether it's also getting involved in our cycle challenges or our runs. We've just started launching, we had our inaugural Transaid Football Cup this year. So there's a whole range of different ways to fundraise for us, provide technical expertise. And we're also, as mentioned earlier, often in the lookout for equipment too, and quality training vehicles to help build the fleets at the training centres we're in. So we have an ambassador scheme as well, where people can bring their expertise and energy to the table. So there's all sorts of ways to engage with us. Florence, if you want to add any more to that list.
No, obviously there's Cycle Kenya as well, and there'll probably be a UK or European challenge next year. But I think, you know, we're always open to new suggestions and ideas. So if you're interested in doing something for Transaid, but you haven't quite seen the thing that fits for you, I would say, you know, just get in touch and we can have a chat about what that might look like.
Brilliant. Okay. And of course, they can sponsor me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Details at the end of this podcast. Okay, guys, thank you so much. Pleasure talking to you both.
Thank you very much, Will. Thank you.
Thank you. If you're interested in sponsoring me on my Cycle Kenya Challenge, you can do so on my Just Giving account. Just search for Will Shires. And Shires is spelled S-H-I-E-R-S. Any companies donating £250 or more will get their logo added to a page that will run occasionally in Commercial Motor magazine. Thank you so much for your support, however small the amount might be.